versus just ride. The world is like a ride. You think it's real? Think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. The world is like a ride. You think it's real? Think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. The tide goes up and down, round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored. It goes up and down, round and round, and it's very loud, louder. Don't worry, don't be afraid, be afraid. It's just a ride. And we can change it any time we want. It's only a choice between fear and love. Why are we here?
I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it?
The big electron.
Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa.
The big electron.
Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa.
It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so do we. For a little while.
Greetings, programs. Welcome to the first official Red Pill Sunday School radio program. I'm Clint, your host. So glad I could be here at UCY.TV. Thanks so much to Jules and all the listeners for continuous support and a place to talk, a little pedestal to preach from here. I gotta get right into this today because I'm either going to lose your interest or I'm going to gain it today. I want to tell you about what this show is going to be about. I don't want to waste any time. I don't want to pretend to. I don't want to advertise anything. I don't want to sell you anything. I just want you to listen and consider what the hell's happening out there. Because I know everybody's wondering what the hell is happening out there. And hell is not a word to be contended with, because in the legal dictionaries, of course, hell is a word that is defined as a debtor's prison, a prison beneath the executure, which we now call the judicial and a treasury. The word bench, meaning bank, if I'm not mistaken on that one. It's been a while. I have to convince you today that we're in hell. We're in our self-made hell, as defined and as it is described in many texts, including the Bible. Now, as soon as I say the Bible, that's where people seem to want to just tune out. But I'm going to tell you right now that if you're foolish enough to think that the Bible has no place in, one, the government, the system of law, then I don't know what to say, because you put your hand on it when you go to court. You have all the founding fathers speaking of it. You have every constitution that has ever been made for any state or national. You have the first thing that it says is a praise and a thank you to the Almighty, the Supreme Being, the God, whatever words are chosen. And so we need to recognize what that means. Why is that the case? And that is what we're going to be talking about today. Because if I cannot convince you, now, let's step back a moment. I'm not here today to convince you that some God exists, some man in the clouds. Okay, that's not why I'm here. What I'm here to tell you is I just want you to stop for a moment. I want you to think. Well, wait a minute. Why is it that government is operating under this? Why is it government operates under the principles, the laws of the Bible? Why is it that government acknowledges God, specifically an act of God? Wait a minute, maybe I should stop here and reconsider that I've given my fealty, my subjection to a government that does believe in God. Now, that's a strange way of looking at it because, of course, government doesn't actually exist in any form. Government is no man, for instance. No man is government. Government is, of course, the name of some system of law. Generally, of course, that law is against the Bible, which is the ironic part about it. Now, what we need to understand, again, is not so much the notion whether I believe in God or you believe in God. Hell, we don't even know what the word God means. That's the most important part of it all. Amazingly, we've never been taught the definition of the word God as it was used in the Bible, which is just one of the most amazing things ever. However, and we'll get into that. However, right now, I just want to talk about the fact that government, quote-unquote, believes in God in a fictional capacity. Now, you always have to put your fiction hat on here. We're going to be talking about legal fiction. When I talk about things that are not real, they become a reality in our lives because we are giving our fealty, our allegiance, our subjection to the system of law that is this government. And you have to understand that that law is built on top of a foundation. That foundation, as we can easily verify, is, of course, the notion or concept of Christianity in its truest form. Now, when I say in its truest form, that is where religion goes out the window. This is a pure relation or notion to the actual way that Christianity is defined by our court system. I have read this before, but I think that it's so important to start off today because we're trying to establish what it is that you believe because you're a subject of government. In other words, what government says is the law. What government says is God is therefore also yours because you are a citizen, because you have subjected yourself to their system. We have to know what their system is based on. And so we go and we read from, this is my favorite description that I've probably read several times on several different shows. This is from W.C. Anderson's 1889 dictionary. And this gives us a really good understanding of what this nation is based on, even though it's the complete opposite of. You have to understand that it is built on the notion that there is a God, a monotheistic God. It is built on the tenets or laws of Christianity, and we'll get into what that means. And again, this is why you swear an oath on the Bible. What you don't realize when you're swearing an oath on the Bible is that the Bible says swear no oaths. Now, I can't stress this enough. When you put your hand on the Bible in a court of legal law, the word legal meaning anti-God or anti-nature, I cannot stress this enough. That you are literally blaspheming the name of God. You're giving an oath to another God. Why do I say that? Well, that's the word. See, God is a term that you've never been taught before. God is an ambiguous term. It means nothing until it's qualified. We have false gods, we have deities, we have the Greek gods, we have the Jehovah, we have Elohim, we have Theos, which is godlike. We have so many different concepts. All your presidents, your kings, your pope, his bishops, your mayors, your governors, your judges are all called magistrates. And another word for magistrate is God. Little g, God. Very important to distinguish between a capitalized and a non-capitalized. And I got to tell you, all these words are in the Bible, and all of them are named as G-O-D. And so what that means is that when I say the word God and you say the word God and then the church says the word God and the state says the word God, we all mean something different. You see, the word plead is the word pray. You pray to the judge. You pray to the magistrate. You pray to the God. And it used to be written that way in all the court documents. So the concept of God, as opposed to what God actually is, we need to understand the concepts of what a God or God is in the singular or the flattering title of God compared to the notion of all of existence being God. Big difference, of course. But you see, this is the problem, is that you and me and everybody who signed up for this whole citizenship thing, this membership to the Corporation of the United States in Washington, D.C., that district, the word district meaning seizure, distress, and distraint, by the way, because we've all signed up to be under that law, we are now bound to follow that law over any other law. We are, in other words, bound to the gods of the legal realm, and have no access to the God of the natural realm, which, of course, the false gods have as their foundation. And this is tricky. This is where it, because again, there's no reason to create a law unless it is designed to go around the natural law or the law of God, i.e. Jehovah. Jehovah is a word that is used in the Bible. It is the same word as Yahweh. It is the same word as, you know, no matter how you say it, whether you use a J or a Y, it doesn't matter. We don't care about what the word, how the word is spelled. We want to know the intent. And the intent of the word God is everything that is not man-made. When we're talking about the highest supreme power, the universe, the self-existent, it is literally defined, Jehovah, as that which is self-existent and self-evident. That is only what exists in nature, including man, all right, including all of us, including every life form, every star, everything that you see, everything that you can comprehend that is of nature or of reality is said to be Jehovah. Now, contrast that with the realm of fiction or hell, and you've got exactly where we are all at. See, this is so important because this is not a religious battle. This is not a battle between good and evil, etc., etc. These are all just words that have no meaning because they're creations of man. What we're talking about is a battle between reality and fiction. That's it. All legal law is fiction. All kings, all popes, all religions, all states, all nations, i.e. Gentiles. Gentile means nation, which means goyim. All of that is fiction. It doesn't exist in nature. It's not part of that self-evidence, that self-existence. It did not grow out of the ground or bloom on a tree or rain from the skies. It doesn't exist anywhere except in the minds of men who believe and love it and on paper. Words on paper. That's all it is. Words on paper. Now, again, I have to sit here and I have to convince you that because you are of the nation, because you are Gentile, i.e. of the pagan nation, all right, the nation that's built on top of the foundation, which is the Bible, the natural law, you quote from it all the time, you have no idea you're quoting from it. You say, oh, the truth will set you free. That's right from the Bible. All these little sayings, all these things are right from the Bible. You just don't want to give it credit. You've been taught to, you've actually been conditioned. And this is the beautiful part. You've been conditioned to stay away from, to hate the even the thought of that which is the foundation of law. It was, what's his name? Oh, Horace Greeley, who was the founder of the New York Times. This is back in the Civil War days. And he is quoted as saying, he's one of the top guys. He's the elite. And he says, a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. And that takes me to a movie. One of my favorite movies ever made was The Book of Eli. And I don't think a lot of people really caught on to what was being said in the Book of Eli. In the Book of Eli, you had one guy carrying the Bible, protecting it as sacred, on the side of the light, if you will, the good. And then you had the one guy that was searching, and he was searching for the Bible. He had hordes of guys going out looking for the Bible, and yet none of them could read. This is post-apocalyptic, of course. So none of them could actually read. None of them could actually, they didn't know what they were looking for. But he was sending them out to gather all the books that they could find to find the Bible. Why would a criminal element, the worst kind of evil mother, want the Bible? Well, it's the same reason that these people who have been controlling us for so long want it, to keep it from us. It's the same reason that the Pope, the Catholic Church, I should say, used to read the Bible, and still does, in Latin. Latin is said to be a dead language amongst the Gentile, amongst the Goyim that we are. Nobody in that church recognizes the Latin, except the priest class. And you see, this guy wanted to be the priest class. He knew that the power of the Bible lied not in its knowledge, but in its ignorance of the masses of the people. And that is exactly where we stand. That is exactly where we are today, a people who are actually ashamed to even talk about the notions of God, Jesus Christ, and the Bible. We're actually afraid to talk about that. We've been conditioned away from it. And yet a Bible-reading people, according to the elite who control you, cannot be enslaved. Right? So you got this guy trying to take the Bible to a place where it can be recorded and put into a place that it'll be used and understood and translated in a way that people can read it and actually get fulfillment from it and actually become free. And then you have the element that's in control now that has control of the Bible, its language, its translation. Right? Brilliant, brilliant freaking movie that is, in ways that most people don't comprehend. Because this truly is a battle of knowledge. Knowledge will set you free. What is God said to be? It's so simple. God is truth. What is truth? Truth is reality. Truth doesn't have any alternatives. Now we have this fake truth movement out there where everybody has their own truth somehow. There's somehow truths that are arguing against other truths, and yet there can only be one truth, right? And see, that's the difference. See, that's the difference between what is truth, what is God, what is self-evident, what is nature itself, what is all life and all as one, and the truth of money, for instance, which has no truth whatsoever except what man gives to it in his mind. There's no value in money. In fact, the maxim of law is very clear. It says that money is not valued on any one thing. Everything's valued in money, but money is valued only in no one particular thing, meaning it's not valued in anything. And see, in other words, money is the root. When they say money is the root of all evil, or the love, i.e. belief, and money, the use of it, when they say that's the root of all evil, that is a very true statement. Because I'm here to tell you that the only laws that government can make are over its own property. What is government? What is every nation known for? It's known for its money, my friends. What is the one monopoly every nation has? It's money. And the laws and banking rules that go along with it. The credit of the nation, right? That's so obvious. The debt. Without the money, without that system of expressing things in the value of nothingness, which is mammon, the valuation, without that expression, without getting us to value not the priceless nature of everything real, but the price of everything that is artificial, which is names, titles, right? All these false artificial things, all these false laws. See, that's the root of evil. It doesn't come from the money itself. It comes from the notion of valuation, which is mammon. Valuation. We put a value. As soon as you put a value on anything, it becomes unreal. It gets taken, plucked out of nature, and it is now an artificial construct in your head. And you put a value on that construct. You don't consider it in its natural place or its natural right. And this is why we can have slavery. Because one of the greatest sins of the wisdom of the Bible, the greatest sins is ease. We're always searching for the most easy way to get through life. And what's more easy than causing a man to be a slave? Well, what's akin to that? How about employment? See, the word employment just means to be used. When we're employed, we're being used. What are we being paid? Money. What is money? Nothing. King Lear, that famous play, a little Shakespeare here. Nothing can come of nothing. Speak again. On creativity, Aulus Persius Flaccus is famous for saying, out of nothing can come, and nothing can become nothing. Out of nothing can come, and nothing can become nothing. Out of nothing can come nothing. Nothing can become nothing. This is the whole concept of citizenship. Once you're a citizenship, remember, you're equal. You're equally punishable under the law. You have no longer have, you're nothing. You're equal. You cannot go anywhere from there. You either have to continue or quit. From nothing comes nothing, or from nothing, nothing comes. Ex nihilo, nihil fit. I don't know. I'm not good with my Latin, although I should. It's probably the one class I want to take in college. The dead language from which all of our stuff comes from. So, yeah, I mean, what an incredible realization it is to suddenly find out, oh my God, I believe in God by default. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what banner I wear. Government doesn't care if you flash an anarchy sign on your t-shirt. As long as you're its citizen, you're using its product, its money, its property, and you're following its law. So we're talking about an act of God. Well, holy crap. I'm sorry. I know I forgot to read the definition for Christianity, but we'll get to that. And again, it proves the notion of what I'm talking about, the foundation of law. And that's all I'm trying to get you to understand today is the foundation of law. Yes, it's fiction. I don't give a crap what you think about it. I don't care if you believe the Bible or hate the Bible. It doesn't matter is what I'm trying to tell you, because it's the foundation of your law, whether you like it or not. If you're a citizen of the United States, the Bible is the foundation of your law. And guess what? Christ is your redemption. Sorry. There is no monetary redemption. There's no redemption account. It's all bullshit. Okay? Christ is your redeemer, because that is the foundation of law. That is a metaphor. And you don't have to take it literally. You have to understand what that means. Christ is the personification of law. Law. Christ is the man that you're supposed to follow, that you're supposed to follow by example. And to follow the law. That's what it means. Okay, now every legal law is going to be opposed to what Christ did. There's the Christian path, the real, I don't even like to use the word Christian. Christian is not in the Bible. There is nowhere in the Bible that says Christian, unless they're actually using it as an epitaph, a negative averment, an insult. Right? It's in the Bible three times. Christ never said, be a Christian. Christ said, follow me. But that's the metaphor saying, follow the law, because I'm the personification of the law. That's how the story goes. It's that simple. And that's the foundation. I don't care. You can argue with me all you want about whether there is a God, whether there was a Christ. I'm not interested in that. I'm only interested in telling you what the law is. If you don't want to know, then by all means, go back to the truth movement and get several variations of truth. We're not interested in truth today. God is truth, self-evident, self-existent. There is only one truth, and that is what is real, what is around you that is not man-made. Okay, all these legal stuff is man-made. So take it or leave it, folks. You want to know the basis, the foundation of law? I've found the answers. I understand it now. I've written about it. I'm continuing to write about it. I don't know what to tell you. And this is the beauty of it, is that now the realization that once you have the truth, once, which again is God, the self-evidence, reality, nature, that's the only truth. Once you have that, hey, you're no longer viable. You're no longer sellable. You cannot do, you are shunned. You are persecuted because you have the truth. Do you know how uncomfortable the truth is to most people? Do you have any idea? Think about it. Do you ever really seek the truth in your day-to-day efforts, in your day-to-day lives? You don't. No, you seek mammon. You seek valuation. You seek more money. You seek, everything's based around that concept of more and more and more. You never seek what is real. It's just amazing. The truth. You can't argue the truth. You can't apply the trivium to truth. Once you've established something as self-evident, there's no need for the trivium. The trivium is to get to that point. The trivium is to say, well, this is false, this is false, this is false. But if you're basing the trivium and you're coming to a conclusion and you're saying that the truth that you come to in fiction is a reality, well, then you've got a problem. You see, this is the fine line between the use of the trivium and turning it into a weapon, a religion, right? And so what are we going to use the trivium for? Well, obviously, it's in the name. What is the trivium used? Where is it taught? What do we call it? The liberal arts. Art. Art being the key word. How do we define art? Let's go back to Webster's 1828 to get these beautiful definitions that are now basically dead. Right? How do we define art? Well, art is defined as the second person, not the real, the reputation, the fiction. The second person, the indicative mode, the present tense of the substantive verb am. Okay, it says the disposition or modification of things by human skill to answer the purpose intended. In this sense, art stands opposed to nature. What is the trivium for? It has two purposes. It is to identify logical fallacy, one of his most beautiful purposes, which is, of course, something we should all be learning and using. The trivium, thanks to Jan Ervin and his intense presentation of this, but we have to understand it's limited to the arts. In other words, it is limited to what is man-made. It's very important to understand this. Again, art stands as that which is opposed to nature, or again, things that are done by human skill. Well, that includes everything, folks. That is your language. That is mathematics. The numbers that you assign. What's the difference between a number and a name? Well, a number is something you assign to give something a value. It's the same aspect. You're giving something a value, a false value in an art like mathematics, language, and you're assigning more importance to the value that you've given something, some substance, you've given it a form, a form without substance, and you're assigning more value to that. That's where the arts go wrong. This is why everything is so wrong, because we put so much valuation on the artful term, the artful number, the artful explanation, as opposed to respecting what is the reality of things. Whether we know how it's built, whether we know what it is, we don't respect the law of reality. We create our own. This is the problem. And this is where the trivium is the most beautiful thing in the world. But once you find the truth can never be altered. This is why the Bible says Jehovah or God, but its translation in this case is Jehovah, is unchanging. That's how you know why it's, how it's true. How do you know something is the truth? Because it's the unchanging God, as we say, that monotheistic concept that everything is, quote unquote, a part of God. That is real. That is truth. Right? So to get to that point, yes, the trivium is beautiful, but once you're there, you just can't not see the truth anymore unless you pretend, right? Unless you pretend and you do what we do on a constant basis. The second definition is a system of rules for art, a system of rules. This is why we call the legal language or any language, whether it's medical language, any language, we call it a terms of art. Each language is a separate set of terms of art. And only the artist that's performing it, the professional as we call it, are generally key to the words. That's why lawyers and politicians sometimes are so good with the legal language. A system of rules serving to facilitate the performance of certain actions, which is opposed to science. Or to speculative principles, as the art of building or engraving, etc. They are useful or mechanic, liberal or polite. So we're talking again about the liberal arts. The liberal or polite arts are those in which the mind or imagination is chiefly concerned. We're talking poetry, music, and painting. Skill, dexterity, etc., etc. The point here is that the trivium applies to man-made things. It is a way to get around all the fallacious thought patterns that develop from that. But again, once you reach the truth is self-evident. There is no debate. When I see a tree, I cannot say that tree is not a tree. It is self-evident, right? Of course, you know, not getting caught up in the word itself, but you understand the tree, you can't deny the tree, and that the tree is natural, it's real, it's part of nature, i.e. part of God. Remember, there's only one truth. Self-evidence. What is of God? What is of nature? And this is why it says, the truth will set you free. Where can you be free? Again, straight out of the Bible, the truth will set you free. That's not some old quote from some old, that's right from the Bible. The truth will set you free. Where is the truth? The truth is in nature. The truth is in reality. The truth is under the real law, the natural law, the self-evident law of nature, which we call the law of God, which technically should be the law of Jehovah, that four-letter, I can't even think of it, YVH, I can't remember. It's all the same. It's all the same word. It's all the same intent, which is all that we care about. Where can you be free? Folks, where can you be free? Can you be free in a country, in a nation? Of course not. There, they changed the word freedom, and the word freedom is defined as franchise. Franchise is what freedom is in a corporation, okay? That's not the same. That's like a McDonald's being beholden to the mother corporation. That doesn't mean you're free. That means you're a rat in a cage. It means that you are in a debtor's hell, a prison for debtors under the treasury, basically. Well, what is the treasury? It's the jurisdiction of the United States, the district. Remember, district means distraint and distress. Those aren't good words. That's not freedom. When you say it's a free country, it means franchise. It's a franchise corporation. Free country means franchise corporation. It's that simple. You cannot find freedom there in the natural sense, in the real sense. Freedom can only exist in the real. Everything else is property. Your name is property. It's a vessel of commerce. It belongs to the United States. Your church is a corporation of the United States. Everything, your social security number, your job, everything is property of the United States. And you're the actor, the agent that's taking part in that voluntarily. You know, the Bible is also very clear about that. It says those who volunteer or those who follow Christ will be volunteers. That's it. I mean, that's all you need to know. How could you possibly be a volunteer, though? I mean, if you're supposedly a citizen of the United States, well, how can you also then somehow also be a volunteer? See, you know, that's the problem is we don't know what the word volunteer means. We think we do. We build religions about it, around it, in fact. But in fact, the word volunteer is another word for the doctrine of master and servant. When I volunteer for something. See, the reason you don't understand that you're a volunteer in government, in this system of legal law, anti-nature law, anti-God, anti-reality law, the reason that you don't understand why it's a voluntary society is because you just haven't thought it out. What happens when you volunteer for the military? Huh? What happens when you go volunteer for the military? You're free until the point where you sign that contract, right? When that contract comes into effect, you put on your little uniform, you get your head shaved, and you start your basic training. At that point, you are a servant. That is why volunteerism is the doctrine of master and servant. These guys are volunteering to join the service to get benefits from that joining. And therefore, they are now under that strict code and set of laws and rules of the military. They're under the military code of justice, etc., 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 which is a joke. All right, that is volunteerism. At that point, a soldier cannot just go to his sergeant and say, "Well, sergeant, I'm a volunteer. I don't want to do that." No, you will do what he says or you will be put in jail. You're still a volunteer even while you're in jail. Do you understand? That's what volunteerism is. So you say, "Well, I didn't volunteer to be a citizen." Absolutely, you volunteered to be a citizenship of the United States. The second you started writing your full name in school, the second your mom and dad put you in school under that legal name that was created by the birth certificate, that was the point where you were throughout childhood confirming and ratifying that you are the agent for that name, for that property, that vessel in commerce. And you're going along, and eventually you hit the age of consent, or what we call adulthood. What is adulthood? Technically, in the legal realm, adulthood is legalized or lawful adultery. Now, once something is legalized, it's lawful. So if death is legalized, murder is legalized, it's lawful. If it's licensed to a few, if you have a license to kill, it means it's lawful for you to kill. Well, that is, of course, opposite to the natural law. That is opposite to what the Bible says. No, you don't have a right. It is not never lawful to kill, except in self-defense. But if everybody's following the law, then who needs self-defense? Right? So, yeah, the whole thing, man, once you figure this out, once you're able to distinguish what is truth and never, ever call fiction truth again, never say that the truth of money is that its value is $1. Never say that the truth is anything in this legal realm, anything on television or in the movies, anything you read in books, any histories. There's only one truth, and that is the self-evident, self-existent truth. And yet, we argue and debate, and we have a movement that never frickin' moves anywhere called the Truth Movement. And we're constantly bickering and infighting and battling over what is truth. And yet, we don't realize none of it's true. None of it. None of the language is not truth. No word you speak is ever going to be truth. A word is not reality. See, we're stuck in this matrix of artificialness. It's so incredible. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful trap. But I digress, because I still have to convince you. I still have to convince you that because government believes in God, I have to convince you that government believes in God, and therefore whatever God it believes in and bases its law upon is the same one that you do. And again, the whole idea is to get you to go outside of the Bible law, outside of the very foundation of law that is the Bible. Let's go to the maxims of law. Well, why would you have maxims, principles of law that must be followed if it wasn't true? If God, in fact, didn't exist, and or at least as a construct, a fictional construct of the legal realm, why then put it in all of these maxims? For instance, an act of God does wrong to no one. An act of God does wrong to no one. Why would that be a maxim of law? What is an act of God, and why is government acknowledging first that there is a God, and secondly, that there is an act of God? Why then would an act of God do no? Well, let's read the next one. The act of God does no injury. That is, no one is responsible for inevitable accidents. Ha! How interesting. So wait a minute. So you're saying that there is an act of God, but the act of God does no injury, and that an act of God is also an inevitable accident. So earthquakes, volcanoes. Well, what does that mean, folks? Wake up. That's talking about nature. That's talking about reality. That's talking about everything but what is man-made. What's another maxim? No one is held to answer for the effects of a superior force or of an accident unless his own fault has contributed. When something happens that comes from a superior force, well, gosh, what could government possibly say is a superior force to government? Why, of course, an act of God. So it acknowledges a God. It doesn't say who or what that God is, but you can kind of understand that it's talking about Jehovah here. Why? First of all, it's pointing towards the Bible. Second of all, Jehovah is defined as essentially all of nature, all of existence that is self-existent, not man-made, as one God. This is why an act of God, I mean, who can you blame? Who can you sue? How can you say that an act of, you know, and this goes to all the people who say, who blame God. How many people out there blame God? Even the atheists, they'll say, God damn it, or they'll blame God, right? How do you blame God? How do you blame nature for taking its own course when you're going and doing everything against the harmony of nature, i.e. God? How can you possibly blame God for simply putting itself back into harmony because it has you as an infection? How can you possibly be that ignorant? And I'll tell you why. It's because the Bible's been kept through. Because a Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved by such fallacious nonsense. But a Bible-reading people also needs to know the language and the meaning and the intent of these words. So now we're sitting here. We now know that the maxims, the very foundational maxims of law, say that there is a power that is higher than government. And it is the power that we base our government upon. Wow, that's pretty important. And so what the legal realm does is it puts a name on everything. It creates a language and it puts a name. You know, he who controls the words, or the nouns specifically, the persons, places, and things, right? person exists in a place, which is a jurisdiction, which has properties, which are things, right? Ah, persons, places, and things. That's the importance of the noun. Well, David Slauson says, names are an important key to what a society values. Anthropologists recognize naming as one of the chief methods for imposing order on perception. Now, I want you to think about if naming, if your name and the name of everything around you, keeping in mind that the name is man-made, what is real is before you. When you call what is real, say, a rabbit or an avocado or a rock, that doesn't mean that that thing is an avocado. It doesn't mean that that thing is a rabbit. It's a self-existent being. It is part of God. In other words, part of nature. That's how you must consider all things real, never allowing the name to be more powerful than that which it represents. The name can never be more powerful than that which it represents. Or you have the legal fiction, which we exist in today, this matrix of legal code, names, and language. We call it word magic. Woohoo! One of the chief methods for imposing order on perception is the process of naming. Well, hey folks, now let's take the opposite of that. What is then the chief methods for imposing chaos on perception? Well, that would be confusion, anarchy. It would be confusion in the name, confusion in the meaning of the word, right? Because when we're saying naming, everything in nature has been named. Every action has been given a word. And if we're all going around and we're all confused about the actual meaning of these things, we're screwed. We can't communicate. We can't read old texts. We certainly can't get anything out of history because we can't differentiate what is fiction and nonfiction. We can't get anything out of the Bible because we can't understand the metaphor. We can't understand the poetry. If you don't have the foundation, the literal term, the literal meaning of a word, then you could never understand why it's being used in allegory or in metaphor. And it is so important to understand that the Bible is metaphor. Every aspect of it is metaphor. There's nowhere where it says it's a history. There's nowhere where it talks about an afterlife. It's talking about heaven and hell on earth. Period. End of story. There's no reason for the Bible to have the law of this realm if all you're interested in is the next realm. That concept came from the congregational... That's a whole history I'll have to go into some other time. But that came from the early settlements, you know, when all this crap about the rapture started coming out. All these things that are not biblical at all and yet guide the entire religious principle of today, right? All of religion. We're not here for religion. I'm not teaching you or telling you about religion. Religion is a noun. Religion is the name of a corporation that gets together and tries to rule. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. When you follow something religiously, which is a verb, right? Adverb, verb. Well, that's different. Now if I say follow the law religiously, well, you've just turned a stagnant, worthless religion into something that actually means something. You're actually doing something. You're actually following the law of God, i.e. through the personification of the word, the law, which is Jesus Christ. Again, oh no, there's that word again, Jesus Christ. You know what Jesus Christ is defined as in the concordances? And I always, you know, once I saw this, everything was clear. Jesus is defined as, or has the secondary meaning of, Jehovah is salvation. Well, how can Jehovah, i.e. all of his self-existent nature of the universe, as it is, without fiction, without name, without artifice, how can that be salvation? Well, what is it salvation from? Right? And you find that everything that the Bible talks about is against the legal realm. In other words, following Jesus Christ, following, i.e., the personification, the story of the law, as told by the Son of the Son of God, where, of course, in the Bible it says we're all to become sons of God, which means that we're following God's law, right? Who followed God's law? Why, of course, Jesus Christ. So we follow the Son. Son means law, and law means word, and word means son. That's the intent, that's the notion of these words. But, see, we're not taught that. We're not given the benefit of the meaning and intent of these words. If we were, then the whole damn thing would be so clear. And this is why I've spent so many years uncovering all of these terms, uncovering the metaphor. Oh my God, the metaphor. It's just so beautiful. So beautiful when you understand it. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to cause you to understand. I'm here to teach, because I've now got to the point where I can. If you don't want it, again, there's plenty of quote-unquote truth out there for you to go and lose yourself in, which every single aspect is what we call the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. You know what that means? You know what that's a metaphor for? That is a metaphor simply for the concepts of man, what is not of nature. There's no evil or good in nature. It's just, nature exists as it is. What happens in nature is an act of God, period, end of story. No one can be caused injury or come to harm from nature. These are legal terms. Can you imagine, like, someone actually judging? That would be the opposite of judging God. You hurt me, God. I'm going to take you to court. Right? It doesn't make sense. It's like, get up, dust off your wounds, forgive, live in love and peace, go on. But no, you're stuck in this realm where you have a God that says, that wears a bar association identification and a black robe, which has a very interesting significance. And you're told, you know, by the attorney class, the devil class, literally, that's what they're called, devils, and we'll get into that sometime. You're told by that devil class, those devil's advocates, that you should sue for money to represent a remedy for your injury. Remember, God, Jesus Christ, the Redeemer, but you're to go to court and sue for money. What is money? Nothing. Money is nothing. Money is nothingness. You're to sue for nothing as a remedy. You see, you're always going back to nothingness. And that's the beauty of this system. The whole design of the legal system is to keep you in nothingness. You don't actually own any of your property. You don't own your children. You've given them up to the state through the birth process. You've literally been screwed out of everything. You have nothing, and you trade your stake in nothingness through the monetary system, unbeknownst to yourself. You are human capital. You are referred to as human capital. Russia even has opened its borders to Americans who can prove their genealogy to Russia. Now, did you know this? Russia now says if you're Russian, you can prove it through your genealogy. We will give you 2.5 acres or whatever that is in hectares. And you can come over to Russia and settle. Right? Russia is like the new America right now. Russia is... good or bad, I don't care. Russia is like the new America right now. Russia is giving out homesteads, essentially. So you have this notion of human capital. What is Russia actually saying in its article? It actually referred to the notion that it is trying to build its human capital in those areas where it's accepting homesteading. That's what it said. It referred to the notion of building its human capital. In other words, its population. Why use that term? Well, first of all, human is a word that is not man. Human is basically a sophist man, a man that does not govern himself, is not responsible for himself. This is why we use the word human. Human is what belongs to man, but is not man himself. Human is what belongs to man, but is not the full you know, the whole, the being, right? It's not man, it's what belongs to man. So when you use that term, when government uses that term specifically, it's not a good thing. It's an insult, trust me. It's a way of saying that you're stupid and dumbed down. So when we say human capital, well, that's, capitalism comes from capita, meaning per head. So human capital, capitalism per head. Again, this goes back to employment. How can we use the people to create capital? Where does money come from? It comes from every time you sign for a loan or whatever. It's created out of thin air, right? Out of nothing comes nothingness. So you're talking about you're talking about an entire system of human capital. That is what each nation is. That is what the Gentiles are. People who are stuck, persons who are stuck in the realm of mammon, right? That's why you say you cannot have two gods. You cannot have money and also be in nature, because nature is priceless. Nature has no value. Nothing in nature can be put into a fictional thing and given a value. A name cannot be more powerful than the real. And yet, valuation can only be placed on the name, because the name is property. Nothing is property of anybody or anything or any government but the name, the title, the style. You see, and that is, of course, what the entirety of the legal law is based upon, the name. I've taken the name on the birth certificate, the agnomen, which means a name, the name of an event, as opposed to the cognomen, which is a family name, right? I've taken my last, and the last name is attached to the first name, the Christian name. Now, don't call it that. I'm sorry, but that's what they call it in law. If you are stupid enough to not say that your first name and acknowledge that your first name is called the Christian name in law, then I can't help you. If you can't come down and understand what's happening here, there's no way that you'll ever come to the truth. If you understand that the Christian name, the first name, as in the first will and testament, the first name, God-given name, is a gift, and the last name, the agnomen, the event, the name based on an event. What is an event? A birth certificate is a recording of an event. Okay, it's the creation of a legal entity or person. Straw man, a man of straw. Straw just means you have no substance. Form without substance, no blood. Or the second that you enter into the legal realm by confirmation, which is a subject we'll tackle, soon as you confirm that name, soon as you start using that property that is that name, then you are a slave to the system of law and government that enforces it. That's how it works. That is ultimately the entire message of the Bible, when you really get down to it, is to explain what I'm trying to explain to you today. The difference between fiction and reality, and how when you fall into that matrix code, that fictional realm of legalism, and you put false valuation on things, you're now you're not in nature anymore. You're not in the priceless, timeless nature anymore. You're not living eternally. You're living for a term of life. And that brings us back to what an act of God is. What is an act of God? Where do you see this notion of what is an act of God? Hello, insurance. It's in every insurance policy. The whole system is based on insurance and reinsurance. Insurance against the insurance you took out. Well, I'm going to take out insurance that's going to pay me if my house gets destroyed. Well, I'm going to take out and also going to take out insurance that says, well, if my house isn't destroyed, I'm also going to get paid. That's how the whole system works. That's what hypothecation is. That's what all this old stuff is. Insurance and reinsurance. But you see, reinsurance is only there because insurance doesn't cover an act of God. So you have to create an insurance that actually does cover an act of God. Now remember, an act of God is that which is defined by government. This is not me. This is not, I mean, go look. You'll see that, you know, if you're, unless you've specifically insured yourself for an act of God, earthquake insurance would be an example, then you're screwed. Because remember, God harms no one. An act of God, an accident, harms no one. I cannot stress how important this is. Because then we have to go and we have to, let's see here, act. Now I want you to know that I'm actually in my second document right now, but a lot of this stuff I'm pulling, I can pull out right from my book. And I offer my book for free, download it, and you can find a lot of these concepts within that book. Just do a search. It's also searchable. All these terms are defined. Unfortunately, Act of God is not defined until the second book, which isn't out yet. But I'm putting these out there on purpose so that you can go through these things and search for these terms without having to go to a dictionary, without having to go, because the same term that's in the dictionary, the one that will really make you understand is in this book. All right, I used 5-6 different dictionaries and pulled the one that best makes you understand the concept, the one that is most honest. We'll put it that way. So we go and we read. Now, I want to stress again, if government defines an act of God, that means government must therefore acknowledge God. If you are a subject, a voluntary subject of government, and government therefore says it's your master and you believe what it believes and you follow its law above all others, then you have just been shown that there is a higher power. The government recognizes that higher power. You don't have to get all religious and weird about it. You just have to acknowledge the fact that reality is higher power than fiction. That's all it is. You can call reality good and fiction evil. Art, artifice, technology. Technology just means art. One of the most interesting words that I found, which I was kind of surprised about, was the word data. You ever looked up the word data in the old dictionaries? For instance, if we go to Webster's 1828, data, things given or admitted, quantities, principles or facts given, known or admitted, by which to find things or results unknown. Folks, see, now you hear the word data, you think computers, and you think empty space and with words. But the true meaning of data, the fact that you put all of your data upon the internet, share it with everybody, you're giving or admitting your principles, your facts, your identity, you're giving away your data, that which is known or... So now what is secret, what is private is now public. It's now published. This is why I didn't publish my book. I didn't write it under a surname. I didn't write it under a legal name. I wrote it anonymously. Anonymously just means no person. I'm a man, not a person. Okay, I'm coming to you today as a man, not a person. A person is not a man. A man is not a person. Okay, a person is your status in society. A persona is a mask that you wear. It's your reputation. But it's a straw man. It's a straw man argument. You should give me this credit because I have this credit score, which shows that I've been a good creditor. That's a straw man argument. That shows nothing. I know people that get bankrupt themselves and gone through bankruptcy 3 or 4 times. And every new time they get credit. Because their credit is everything's erased. Oh, but my credit score says I'm a good creditor. Therefore, you should give me credit. That's a straw man argument. And who gets the credit? The straw man. The person, the persona that you portray, that you act as, that you are an agency of, that commercial vessel. It's not you getting credit, you fool. It's your property. But you don't have any property. It's your name. It's your legal entity, your vessel that's getting credit. Because that's the only way that the government can foreclose and cause you to go to a debtor's prison. It's not you. It's the name that you're borrowing. It's the legal entity you're acting as that gets the credit, not you. This is artifice. This is pure and raw data. It is your vital statistics turned into an artificial fiction, a person. Remember, person, place, or thing. These are names. These are nouns. They're not real. Nor is credit real. Credit is the offering of nothingness, money, in a form that comes from nowhere. It's just created right there in a journal. I think we're all familiar with how money works now, with the fractional reserve system and all that. Yep, just create. It takes you putting your signature down, your signature representing the person of government, the property of government, for a bank to be able to give you that loan, because you're giving it to government. Government always wins. Money always goes back to government. There is no, you can never win. And by the way, I want to be clear. There is no winning in court. Win is not a legal term. You don't win. There's no winning. A slave never freaking wins. You can't go into court. Hey, I went to court and I won us a lawsuit and therefore I won money. You didn't win anything. You won. You won more unhappiness. You won more debt currency. Just because you have, right? You have IOUs, promises to pay. You've won nothing. You're still a slave. You can only spend that money in the company store. What is the company store? The company store model is the United States. All corporations are of the United States. Again, property of the United States. Don't be fooled. There's no such thing as private corporations. There's no such thing as a public corporation or a private corporation comes from nothingness. It comes from government. It's not independent. It's not separate from government. It's under the laws of government. If it was private, it wouldn't be under the laws of government, now would it? It wouldn't have to. Why is it? Because it uses government script, government money. And so you think that you have a choice because you can go to Target. You don't have to go to Walmart, those bastards. You can go to Target. You can go to Raley's. You can go to Piggly Wiggly. I can get better prices here than there. But the quality's better here, so I'll pay more money for quality. Really? That doesn't exist in nature either. There's no. Can you imagine? Jeez. This is all craziness. This is nuts. This is... How can you not see that money is the root of all evil? It is, by saying that, it is the root of all artifice. Most of this stuff would not be done, could not be done, and would not need to be done if it wasn't respected in the first place. Right? What is love but respect? Love is belief. I believe something exists. I love it or hate it. Doesn't matter. Those terms are synonymous. And so we earn our paychecks, we earn our money, and we go to the company store. What is the company store? It's every corporation. It's all government. We're only allowed to use a certain script, a certain money. We think this is a good thing. Of course, it's it's the key to slavery, of course. We can only use a certain currency. If we try to use anything else, we go to jail, right? There's been fools that have tried to print silver coins, for instance, that have gone to jail because they printed the United States on it, like idiots. I can't even forgive that kind of stupidity. You've just broken copyright rules left and right. You've just challenged the authority of the United States. You've just, it's just amazing that people are that stupid. But there are people, however, that do create silver coins that have nothing to do with nationality. Just concepts, liberty, etc. And I commend those people. I feel sorry for the other people who've gone to jail for being absolutely stupid, ignorant. But, I mean, everybody in jail is there voluntarily. Remember that. One of the most important lessons I can teach you is that every single person in jail right now is there voluntarily. The company store, you know, you can only spend your money under the law. Every law is based on money. Every product you buy is received, has a receipt, has, you get all these consumer benefits and all these things by using and staying in the money system. Well, the money system is government. Government is the money system. Government is nothing else. Okay, everything, every law in government, every U.S. code has to do with money or insurance in various ways. So, yeah, that's what we're talking about. So what is an act of God? An act of God is defined in Black's Law First Edition as an inevitable accident or vis major in the Latin. And any misadventure or causality is said to be caused by the act of God when it happens by the direct, immediate, and exclusive operation of the forces of nature, uncontrolled or uninfluenced by the powers of man, and without human intervention. Wow, this is two different words there. Uninfluenced by the power of man, that's an act of God, and without human intervention, again, an act of God. Well, human is referring to that which belongs to man. This is how you can understand these words as they're used. It's very important. Okay, when the government says man, again, this is an ambiguous term. Man can mean slave. Man can mean police. Man can mean, right? So you have to know what it's talking about, uncontrolled or uninfluenced by the power of man and without human intervention. Human, so without something intervening that is a creation or belonging to man. Simple as that, man. Man. See, there's another use for man. And is of such a character that it could not have been prevented or escaped from by any amount of foresight or prudence, or by any reasonable degree of care or diligence, or by the aid of any appliances, etc., etc. In other words, anything man-made, anything that's a creation of man. An inevitable accident or causality. Remember what it said in The Matrix? There's no choice in The Matrix. There's only causality, right? Things that lead you or cause you to do something where you think you have a choice, but you really don't, right? They don't care which president you vote for because they're both of the same bloodline family. They don't give a shit who becomes president. They just want you to vote for one or the other that are on the same team, in the same family. You see, that's causality. You think you have a choice when you vote, when in fact, you don't have a choice who the candidates are, so you don't really have any choice at all. And, of course, any vote, whether you vote no or yes, or whether you vote for the other guy, you're still voting and giving your consent by doing so. You see, this is not a vote. This is a causality. It's a causality that shows that this percentage of the people, and therefore a minority or majority, gives consent. Doesn't matter who you vote for, you're voting for the same thing. You're voting for fiction. You're voting to put a flattering title upon a man who will then act as that title. It's insane that we do this. And yet we call it freedom. Under the term act of God are comprehended all misfortunes and accidents arising from inevitable necessity, which human prudence could not foresee nor prevent. An act of God defined by Black's Four is very similar. An act occasions exclusively by violence of nature, without the interference of human agency. Again, we see the split between reality or nature, God. See, this is the problem. You have a problem with saying that nature and God are the same term. You want to separate creation and the creator. Well, I understand that because that's what the Bible sort of tells you to do metaphorically so that you can understand the story of law. But you got to realize that the definition of Jehovah, of God, of the creator, is all of creation, all of self-evidence, of nature. You see, it's very hard to break away from these religious tenets, because the only way that man can become God is if you separate God and nature. Because man is part of nature. Man is part of God. The only way that man can become a god, a magistrate, a president, a pope, etc., a vicar, a replacement of God or Christ, is to separate man from nature. How can man be God if man is already part of God? Oh, but that's blasphemy. No, it's actually complete and utter logic and reason. And it's how the law works. Screw these religious tenets. They're built for a purpose. And that purpose is to deceive and take you away from exactly what Horace Greeley said, which is that a Bible reading people can never be enslaved. All that stuff is, most of that stuff you hear from the church is not in the Bible. And if it is, it's taken literally instead of metaphorically. And that's where the problem starts. Again, an act of God is violence by nature. Well, that does harm to no one because it's not a legal concept. It doesn't destroy anything legal because legal things don't exist in nature. So it can't harm any person, place, or thing. It means a natural necessity proceeding from physical causes alone without the intervention of man. It is an act, event, happening or occurrence, a disaster, an effect due to natural causes, and inevitable accidents. I'm trying to tell you, folks, by defining an act of God as an act of nature, you've just been told what is higher than government. What law is higher than government? The law of nature. If you were to just follow the law of nature, follow the law of God, you wouldn't have any problem in the legal system. But you see, you've never read the frickin' Bible because it's been kept from you. Where it says, never respect persons. Never respect flattering titles, which is every position of authority. Never, and a banker, any, a doctor, anything. Lawyer. Not even the title of Mr. and Mrs., which has another meaning that we'll get to sometime. That you won't believe. Why do they want you to identify yourself as Mr.? Well, look it up. Go look up the word S-T-E-R. You'll be amazed. But I digress. A natural... Wait, I got to make sure this is clear to you folks. The government has just told you that they are a fiction that is bound under a higher authority, and that higher authority is reality. All right? Because you are acting as one of their fictional characters, their personas, you're wearing the mask of citizenship, you're stuck in the legal matrix. Literally, I mean, it's a perfect analogy. It's why I called this Red Pill Sunday School, because you can take the red pill, you can take the blue pill, right? That actually comes from Philip K. Dick, which comes, I saw that first in, what was it, Total Recall, you know, good old Arnold Schwarzenegger, man. Take this pill, this red pill, and you'll come out of reality and back into the Matrix. Or come out of the Matrix, come back into reality, however you look at it. Right? So, schizoid embolism. So, a natural and inevitable necessity which implies entire exclusion of all human agency, which operates without interference or aid from man. Remember, human is what belongs to man. And which results from natural causes and is in no sense attributable to human agency. It's an accident. Do you know what they call it when you're born? They call it an accident. And for accidents, there must be insurance. See, the whole thing is based on insurance. What they call this is perils. Why do you get insurance? Well, back in the days of maritime law, you had what was called the perils of the sea. And therefore, you had maritime and insurance. Maritime insurance law, basically. Natural accidents peculiar to the sea, which do not happen by the intervention of man, nor are to be prevented by human prudence. In other words, if I built a bad ship, that would be human a problem, right? That would be a man-made problem. Property of man, however you say it. Vessel must be seaworthy when it went to sea to recover a maritime policy. This is, again, Black's Fourth. Perils of the lakes, same thing. Got those Great Lakes out there. Applied to the navigation of the Great Lakes means it's the exact same thing as peril of the sea. But then you come to... So now you understand that this is all... So you're an accident of birth, right? By accident of birth, you become a citizen of the United States. You're born in these borders, and therefore, in felony, by the way, you're considered a felon. Because of this accident of birth, you're put under these... Oh, man, if I were to get into that, that would take up a whole show to try to explain that, but... Basically, you're an unknown. They don't know whether you're going to confirm and ratify the legal name that's bestowed upon the legal entity that's created at your birth. They insure it. They say they insure and reinsure the fact that by the time you're 18, you have fully inundated yourself into the false name, into the legal fiction. You've gotten insurance. You've got a bank account. You've got a social security number. You've signed selective service. You've entered into public education, and you've learned all the things that make you a public entity. Not you, because remember, you're just the actor, the agent, participating and acting as the person. Right, so all those things I just mentioned have to do with the person. The person went to school. The person has a diploma. The person gets paid. The person has a social security number. Right? Nothing to do with you. You're just the volunteer. You're the surety. Now, surety is, of course, the Bible says never be surety. Never that as soon as you strike your hand in a deal. Is what the Bible says, that you're gonna be put in paid for it because you're going under contract, right? Everything's based on contract. How does the devil ever affect anybody's life? Well, contract, right? That's the story. That's the metaphor, right? You know, here we are, these accidents. You know, an accident is that which happens of God in I'm going to pull up some stuff from my book, which again you can download for free at strawmanstory.info. Strawmanstory.info. Take it, use it. When I go to what is an accident of birth? Well, I have to find it first, so it must be in my must be in my first book. Accident of birth. There it is. I like this quote leading into the section on accident of birth. It says, a nation is a group of persons united by a common error about their ancestry and a common dislike of their neighbors. That's Carl Deutsch on nationality and its alternatives. And it's true, you know, you're born into a nation, you're taught to hate all others, you first start with hate and then you get alliance. So the alliance is there, and you temporarily suspend the hate, right? You suspend the, all nations are at war unless they're under treaty, basically. And treaty means only one thing. Peace means only one thing in the legal or political realm, which is, of course, free-flowing commerce. As long as we can agree to do business together, use the national currency, which is of nothingness, and we can control and get taxed and be treated as slaves and have the appearance of freedom and choice, well, then that's peace. You see, as long as you agree, then you have this quote-unquote commercial freedom. What is war? War is simply when commerce gets tied up and can no longer happen. So you have wars over such thing as canals, right? The Suez Canal and the Panama Canal. You have wars over, what's going on in the Middle East, right? Trade. It's all about trade, right? Trade zones and flying over nations and sanctions, which means punishments, right? It's all about commerce. It's about nothing else. It's about money. It's about money and the availability of to use money and credit and trade in other nations. That's all it is. And so you're birthed into, you just, by accident of birth, by an act of God, you are placed into the jurisdiction of one of these nations, and everything is done to get you to conform and consent and confirm the legal identity that you will eventually use to be, quote unquote, a citizen. And citizenship, of course, means subjection. Subjection gives you protection, and with protection, protection requires subjection to law, a basic maxim of law. So what is an accident of birth? Well, again, any and all particulars surrounding one's birth, physical characteristics, social background, and even nationality, considered a result of parentage and the specific circumstances of birth, and are therefore entirely out of one's control. And this is so important to understand, because again, if it's an accident, it's obviously an act of God. I had no control. Although, you know, I was the fastest swimmer. You know, I got to the, I got to the tube through the tube. I don't know, however that works. Fallopian tubes and the, you know, I was the one to break the egg somehow, some way. It was an act of God. How can I possibly explain it, right? Entirely out of one's control, you see, and that's the problem, is that until you're of the age of consent, i.e. adulthood, until you agree to be in permanent, legalized, licensed adultery, or adulthood, wearing the hood of an adult, which is a legal term, doesn't exist in nature, you are still an accident. You're still of God. You're still, you cannot be charged with the crimes of an adult, etc., etc. Right? And that's, even that is being taken away from us at this point. Accident of birth is also defined as a situation caused by who your family is rather than anything you do. A fact, a situation, a personal characteristic, desirable or undesirable, resulting from the circumstances into which a person was born. And you see, going back and forth, it's either talking about the person or the man. When it's the person, what is the person but the vital statistics created from the accident of birth to be put into the identification and sign and token that that identifies the legal persona, the fiction, the straw man, the man of no substance. Oh, sorry, Kitty just jumped on my lap. He does that, likes to interfere. So yeah, accident of birth again. Let me just read this so that we understand. Protection draws with it subjection, and subjection protection. The protection of an individual by government is on condition of his submission to the laws, and such submission, on the other hand, entitles the individual to the protection of the government. Now, again, an individual is not a man. An individual is a person. So the person is protected. You got to understand what this really means. This is not talking about you. This is talking about the person, the individual. Right? Who can government protect? Its own property. And thereby its surety. Right? If the man dies, then there's no one to animate the person. The puppet dies with the puppet master. But who's controlling the puppet master? That's government. That's the laws. The puppet master, the surety, that's you, can only act on condition of your submission to the laws of the state that created your person. You see, if you don't get this, then you don't understand why it is that you're not allowed, that it is actually illegal to follow the Bible law while under the legal system. Literally, true religion or religious following of the moral law, the natural law, is outlawed in the legal realm. This is the, again, the difference between reality and nature. You could call that good and evil, you could call it whatever you want. All right, so now that we know, now that we're at the point where we can truly, truly, without a doubt, I mean, if you're still a skeptic if you're still stuck in the vetetic, you know, skepticism of the current situation that's happening out there, there's nothing that can be done. If you've fallen for all this crap that's coming from the skeptic community, which includes your flat earthers and your, you know, if you are of the point to the point where you don't ever need proof to justify what you insist is the truth, when you can no longer see what is self-evident truth, and when you start claiming something is self-evident truth that is not self-evident, that has no proofs, well, then you've fallen for this skeptic, anarchic, a couple other words for it, nihilist mentality that's being spread. It's the grand delusion, as the Bible calls it. And there will be more and more and more. I'll give you an example. The Mandela effect. Perfect example. I wrote an article about it because, hey, I started getting concerned. I started looking at the Mandela effect. If you don't know what that is, you can look. You can see that, for instance, the Berenstein Bears is now the Berenstein Bears. It's now Forrest Gump said something different. Darth Vader said something different, right? And you go and you realize, hey, all of this is fiction in the first place. None of this is real. Reality hasn't changed. The Mandela effect has only to do with fiction. It was already fiction, so how can nothingness be changed into anything but nothingness? It's fiction, it's not real. You see, and this is the problem with this modern skepticism, which, again, study the Vaitetic sort of, you know, movement, which requires no proofs, and you'll understand what's happening. And there's even a channel on YouTube that is Vaitetic Flat Earth. I mean, that is where it's coming from. You got to realize this is a direct influence of the Theosophical Society, which of course controls the United Nations at this point. Common Core coming from that sort of thought from the United Nations, from Theosophy. This is all in my book. Anyway. We have to now get to this definition of Christianity. Now, I want you to understand that Christianity, as it is defined by government, by the judges, by the gods of the legal realm, you have to understand what they consider as the foundation of law, of their own maxims, principles of law. That is what you have to understand. I don't give a crap what your church, your pastor, your pope, you gotta understand what it is that you're giving your voluntary subjection to, because it will then tell you what you believe. I'm sorry. I know you don't like to hear that. I know you don't like to hear the truth, but it is the truth, and it is self-evident if you only come down from this unholy ground you've been put upon and embrace the fact that you've been purposefully kept from the Bible, and therefore you are an enslaved people. Against Horace Greeley's warning, if you will. So what is a Christian? Now, or I should say, what is, you know, a Christian is defined as one who follows Christ. Okay? Period. End of story. What is a Jew? A Jew is one who goes against anyone who follows Christ, is anti-Christ. That is actually the term Jew. It comes from Iudios, and the Latin terms or the Hebrew terms, Iudios and Yahudi. Those are the two terms that the word Jew is used. Don't confuse the word Jew with Israelite. Israelite, a Jew is something that happens after an Israelite falls away from the law of God. All right, Jew is a bad word. It's not a religion. It's not anything. It's a word that means he who is opposed to Christ, i.e., he who is opposed to the quote unquote new law or New Testament. Right, and this is why you still have usury. What does the New Testament say? No usury, right? No usury. No money. No credit. No flattering titles. No persons. No, none of that. But the old law, the Jewish law, if you will, exists upon that it's the Babylonian system. Right? So that's all Jew means. Jew is what is opposed to Christian. But you have to define Christian. Because remember, Christian is not a word that was used in the Bible other than as a slander. It's used three times in the Bible. Christ never says become a Christian. He says follow me. It never says become a quote-unquote Christian. You see, when you become a Christian, it's like becoming a citizen. It's a member of something. It means nothing. It's a flattering title that has no substance. It's a straw man argument. I'm a Christian, therefore I'm going to heaven. Really? I'd say the opposite is true because you're not following the law. You've taken a flattering title, which the Bible tells you not to do, on your person, which the Bible tells you not to do, and you're pretending to be something you're not because you're not following the damn law. You're not following Christ. You're worshiping his death. They're all hanging on the cross. You're not supposed to worship his death. You're supposed to worship his life. His life was following the law. Again, allegory, metaphor, parables. If you don't do what Christ did, this is what will happen. That's called prophecy. If you don't do the right thing, the wrong thing will happen. That's all prophecy is. It's not meant to predict events. It's meant to say, hey, dumbass, if you do something stupid's going to happen to you. But so you've been conditioned and taken away from this. You've all been lied to. So let's see. How does government define Christianity? Because that's really all that matters. Because you're not acting as yourself. You've denied yourself. Self-love is one of the most important aspects of the natural law. Love thyself as thy neighbor can't happen unless you first love thyself above all else. Right? You can't. Then you'll love everything above all else. And at that point, it becomes, you know, the true meaning of love. Christianity, the system of doctrines. This is, again, from William C. Anderson's 1889 dictionary. One of my favorite dictionaries because I felt like the guy was truly trying to allow its reader to understand and that its reader was not just an attorney. That its reader was actually someone who was trying to learn the truth. Christianity, the system of doctrines and precepts taught by Christ. All right, that's how it first starts out. So again, here's government. So we're recognizing in the legal system, because this is William C. Anderson's legal dictionary, not a regular dictionary. The system of doctrines and precepts taught by Christ, the religion founded by Christ. Now, when it says religion, again, that means a system of law that is to be followed. It is called the moral law, the scriptural, the spiritual law, the law of God, the law of nature. That is what it's talking about. Not a church. Okay, the church is defined as the people, not a building, not a corporation. All right? The religion founded by Christ. Christianity is said to be part of the common law. Okay, this is what a judge will consider. This is what anybody in the legal system will consider, that Christianity is said to be part of the common law. And you'll understand why that's true and why it's so important and why it's voluntary in a moment. Christianity is parcel to the laws of England, and therefore to reproach the Christian religion is to speak in subversion of the law. You see, it's not saying that it's just a religion. It's saying that it's telling you right here, it is the law. It is the foundation of law, both in England and in the Americas, because our system of law came from there and theirs came from Rome. The essential principles of natural religion. Now what is that? What the hell? Natural religion. Come on, folks. That's the worship of nature. That's the worship of the monotheistic concept of God as all of creation, nature, ourselves included, which is why you could put no value on anything. The parts make up the whole. You cannot take one part and say it's more valuable than the whole, because without one part, the whole crumbles. This is why it's said that that nature is priceless. So natural religion and of revealed religion, as they call it, are a part of the common law, so that any person reviling or subverting or ridiculing them may be prosecuted at common law. Now, did you know this? Did you know that at one point in our society, it was so important to acknowledge, understand, read, and live by this system of law that you could be prosecuted for talking bad about it? I mean, compare that to today. Compare that to every media outlet. Compare that to all these people who just absolutely talk down towards Christianity. I mean, I don't think people understand what a how do you say this? You're in a time where you're being given license, legal license to defame the very principle of our law. I don't think you really understand what you're doing when you're doing it. The true sense of the maxim is that the law will not permit the essential principles or maxims of law of revealed religion to be ridiculed and reviled. If we were to allow that, which is what we have done, then you're going to end up with a society that looks exactly what it looks like today, where crosses are being torn down, statues are being torn down, right? Where anarchy is happening in the streets, where what appears to be revolts and protests are actually being organized by the wealthy elite, and protesters are being paid to be anarchical, to get out of hand, to be violent. That's what you get when the very foundation and principle of our system of law, part of the common law, as it says, the natural religion, if you will, Christianity is part of the common law of Pennsylvania in the qualified sense that its divine origin and truth are admitted. What does that mean, folks? It's saying the law is self-evident. It's very important. Okay, it was part of Pennsylvania in 1889, part of the common law of Pennsylvania. And therefore, it is not to be maliciously and openly reviled and blasphemed against to the annoyance of believers or the injury of the public. The public gets injured every time anyone in the public does what they're doing today. Because you're taking the foundation of law, the one thing, again, the redemption, the salvation of law, the one thing that can get you out of the matrix and back into the nature that is actually recognized by the frickin' government, the one higher power that it acknowledges, and you're taking a giant stinking shit upon it. How stupid can you be? Well, you know, we know the answer to that because we've been conditioned to do this. Now, it qualifies what it means by Christianity, and this is so important. Not Christianity founded upon any particular religious tenet, but Christianity with liberty of conscience to all men, i.e. you have a choice. You have the liberty of acting upon your conscience or not. Those who do not become and remain citizens and follow the legal law. Those who have conscience and want to act upon that law become people like me, who are on the verge and on the precipice of leaving this system somehow, some way. Not fighting against it, leaving it. I don't threaten it. I'm not stupid enough to go against it. I'm not that dumb. I'm not going to go against its military force. I'm simply going to leave it. I don't know how. I don't know when. But I hope that some of you will come with me. The maxim does not mean that Christianity is an established religion. Again, Christianity, not an established religion. Why? Because we're talking about the Bible. It's a book. It's a book of law. It's not a religion. nor that its precepts, by force of their own authority, from part of our system, form part of our system of municipal law. In other words, municipal law is not the Bible. It's the opposite of the Bible. It goes against. Nor that the courts may base their judgments upon the Bible. Okay, what? Wait a minute. I put my hand on the Bible. Oh, wait a minute. Remember, when you put your hand on the Bible, you swear an oath to the state. You're swearing an oath to a false god. I don't know why that's not clear. And therefore, you've just put the Bible out of circuit. It's no longer there. The principle that Christianity is the law, the voluntary foundational principles of law come from that, have just been obliterated from the court. You've acknowledged that you're a person of the state. In other words, not an act of God, but an act of the state. And you're now under that law, which is opposed to what it recognizes as quote-unquote true natural Christianity. You will not bring God or the Constitution into any courtroom because it does not apply to you, because you are only agent for a fictional entity, and that is not of God. Nor is it of the Constitution. The Constitution says the men, well, I should say the Declaration of Independence says that all men are created equal. And under God, that is a true statement. But hey, guess what? All persons are not created equal. Persons are not meant to be created equal. Persons are meant to be unequal. While given equal rights, they're meant to have flattering titles that allows one to do more than the other. They're meant to have status like male or female, woman. In other words, like human, man with a womb, right? To be considered as less than or inferior to the other. That doesn't happen in nature. Those are all legal concepts. Those are anti-God, anti-nature concepts. Nor that religious duties may be penally enforced. All right, so what does that mean? That means that they literally cannot enforce your duty to obey the natural law. Right? That's not what government's for, because remember, it's against natural law. They cannot force you to follow the moral law. That's voluntary. And this system is not moral. This system is amoral or immoral at best. Okay, so they literally cannot force you to be good to each other. They cannot force you to love thy neighbor as thyself. They can't force you to not respect persons. If they did, they wouldn't have a frickin' racket corporation. Because it's all based on your respect of persons. In other words, it's based on you're literally stepping out of nature and into fiction. It's based against the Bible. Nor that legal discrimination in any favor of Christianity is allowed. Legal discrimination in favor of Christianity is not allowed. Think about that. That means that if you are part of any denomination of the Roman Church, and when I say that, I mean, hey, you're worshiping Sunday as the Sabbath, because even the Roman Church says, hey, that's our creation. If you're still following the Sunday, then you're following Rome. You're not a Protestant. You're a fool. That means that you're legal. You get no benefit of anything for being a member of a corporation that calls itself a religious church, because they're not real. They're not a people. They're a corporation. They're words on paper. They're buildings. Remember, the church in the Bible is a people. For instance, the Israelites, not Israel. Israel is completely opposite to what we're talking about. I'm talking about the original notion of the Israelite people who were obeying God's law. Some of them, or all of them, when they called Israel the whore, because it fell from the law. And it became Jewish. You get nothing for being, no legal consideration whatsoever for being part of a church. You can't go into court in a legal realm and say, well, I'm Christian, and therefore I don't have to follow your law. Well, our records indicate that you've just identified yourself as a non-Christian, as a citizen of the United States, and therefore not a Christian. So how can you sit here and say you're a Christian when you're not following the law that makes you a Christian? You can't. You cannot go into a legal courtroom and declare yourself Christian, which means following the law of Christ, of God, I should say, through Christ. And it's moronical, if that's a word. It's moronic to even suggest that you could walk into a courtroom that is anti-God and get some protection by playing one of its anti-God characters and saying, I'm a part of God. No, you're not. You're not acting as an act of God. You're acting as an act of state. Are you an act of God or are you an act of a state? That's really all they're looking for when you walk into a courtroom. And how do they determine that identification? When you make an appearance in court, you're making an appearance as a fictional entity. Okay? There's no way that you can possibly justify, because remember, God respects no persons. God respects no flattering titles. God respects nothing artificial, right? An act of God is anything of nature. So you can't go into a court and pretend to be a man, a natural man, when you're acting and appearing in person. They don't call for the man Clint by my Christian name. They call for the legal corporate entity called Clint Richardson with the last name, the surname, the last will and testament. You see? To me, this stuff has become so obvious. It almost feels funny to be teaching this because it's so freaking obvious. But I realize it's not obvious to people because it's just because I've sat in my basement for 10 years and freaking learned this stuff. And I've come to understand the metaphoric, come to understand that fiction becomes a false sense of reality. And is treated as such, and that you, because you're acting in fiction, are treated according to the sanctions of law. It's the surety to the fiction that is punished. You can't punish a fiction, but you could punish the surety. In other words, the one who ensures that the person will follow the law. That's what you are. You're a surety. Okay, so... Obviously, the Bible is, again, completely out of the picture. The natural law, then, is completely out of the picture when you're in court acting as fiction. You're acting as pure, raw data, technology, art, artifice. You cannot claim the law of God when you are acting under the law of the state. The best features of the common law, especially those which regard the family and social relations, if not derived from, have at least been improved and strengthened by the prevailing religion and teachings of the sacred book. But the law does not attempt to enforce the precepts of Christianity on the ground of their sacred character or divine origin. The municipal law, the law of the state, the fictional realm, never enforces the precepts of Christianity, i.e. the natural law. This is why you're screwed. This is why you can never win. You can never win in a situation where you're a slave to this type of law. It's so obvious. I mean, it's so freaking obvious. I don't understand how it can't be obvious. But okay, let's continue. We can't enforce, unenforceable. This is so important, folks. It's unenforceable. It's voluntary. Some of those precepts, though we may admit their continual and universal obligation, we must nevertheless recognize as being incapable of enforcement by human laws. What are human laws? That which belongs to man, i.e. an act of man, an act of the state, not an act of the God. Why? Because the law of nature is superior. The whole idea of human laws is to escape the natural law, to get license and permission to commit deeds that are against the natural law, the law of God. That's the whole point. So, of course, they're not going to enforce anything moral. Those precepts, moreover, affect the heart and address themselves to the conscience. While the law, that's the law of the Bible, right? So that means you're always self-responsible, you're always thinking, you're always acting, should I do this? Is this part of the natural law? Am I fulfilling my duty to God and my fellow man and nature in its priceless condition? There's the laws of the state. Well, the laws of the state can regard only the outward conduct. So what the person does. for which reasons Christianity is not a part of the law of the land in any sense, which entitles the courts to take notice of and base their judgments upon it. The Bible, the natural law, my God, folks. Christianity is not a part of the law of the land in any sense, which entitles the court to take notice and base their judgment upon it. Do you understand what that means? This is why you're so confused when you go to court. You don't realize that the whole thing is based on your person, not your person. I mean the property of government. You're strictly there to receive the punishment as the agent for service of process for that person. There's no morals. Because there's no spiritual law there because there's nothing spiritual happening. We're talking about fiction. How can you have a moral law over fiction? It doesn't work. And this is why the Bible says don't respect any fictions. No persons, no places, no things. Except so far, they can find that its precepts of principles have been incorporated in and made a component part of the law of the state. In other words, they do follow the very, very, very clear principles, maxims of law that, like we read earlier, right? That God, an act of God does no one harm. That's very important. But see, when you're acting in person, you're not acting as an act of God. You're acting as an act of the state. So those principles go out the window. You go in, once you get into contract and the principles of law that deal with contract, you'd be shocked at what they say if you just read them. For instance, if you know it's a fraud and you call it a fraud, but you can't do that if you keep acting in the fraud, right? You can't call something fraud while receiving a benefit from the fraud. Therefore, you have to give up money entirely, right? You can't call money fraud if you have a love and belief in it and you're using it. This is the law. And finally, we get to the last sentence here. The maxim can have no reference to the law of the national government, since the sources of that law are the Constitution, treaties, and acts of Congress. So William C. Anderson just here said that the Bible can have no reference. The natural law and all the maxims that have to do with it, all the principles of law that are the foundation of Christianity, the foundation of law, of the common law, can have nothing to do with anything because, hey, that law is based on the Constitution, treaties, and acts of Congress. Those are anti-God. You'll notice that God is not in the Constitution. Jesus is not in the Constitution. Now, folks, today's purpose was what? It wasn't to get you to believe in God. God is self-evident. I don't need to prove God. That's the beautiful thing about it. We know what the definition of God is now, so we can actually take it and use it and be confident in our use of it. My goal was to make you believe and make you understand, I should say, without a doubt, that government believes in God. That government bases its law upon the Bible, on the back of it, as it tears it apart in every way, shape, and form, that the legal law is truly anti-God, anti-Bible, anti-nature, anti-reality. You see, that was my goal. If I have not attained that goal today, then you don't even bother listening to the rest of this series of shows that we're going to be doing here on UCY, because, hey, if you don't get what I just said, if it took me 2 hours to explain that, if you still don't get it, there's no point. You just go back to the truth movement, okay? Go back to the truth movement. Go look for your remedies in dollar signs. Go seek the end of the rainbow, even though the rainbow is a delusion. There's no end, right? There's no gold. And anyway, the Bible says seek knowledge above all things, including gold and silver. Now, after all that, does it make sense why people aren't calling me for interviews anymore? You know, this stuff ruins the entirety of the truth movement. It ruins everything. It causes you to be self-responsible. It causes you to recognize the law. No wonder nobody wants to touch it. No wonder he wants it. It ruins the entirety of the sales model of patriot mythology, of all this crap that you hear all around the way. And so it's time to start our own movement. Let's call it the reality movement, or let's just call it God. I don't know. Law, maybe? Or can't we just maybe follow the law and not have a name? Why do we have to name it? Why can't we just live it? Anyhow, that brings us to the end of this two-hour segment in this week of the Roman calendar, September 17th, 2017. And that wraps up this week's Red Pill Sunday School. I want to leave you on one final note, just to give you a little reminder that while Jesus Christ may love you without condition, God thinks you're being an asshole. At least until you start following its law. Take care, folks.